Thank you for coming. I'm just going to intro our time, give you a sense of what our time's going to look like. We're going to go from now, 1 o'clock, until 10 till, because orientation starts at 2. So give some time. So we're hoping that a lot of good conversation happens and can continue after this time. So just a bit of a framework. Jason's going to come up and frame this topic of nationalism and patriotism. Then I'm going to organize us to have some conversations in pairs for a little bit. Then we'll hear from our panel. Then we'll get in some groups of four to talk, and then we'll all share. So it's going to be interactive, just like a democracy in its best, right? So here's Jason.
So I thought it would be helpful to hear a little bit from the style and usage folks at Merriam-Webster about where the phrases, or where the terms patriotism and nationalism originated, and how they were used originally, and how they are used today. So I'm just going to read a little bit from the usage guide. One of the many difficulties inherent in creating a dictionary that accurately reflects the language of any large group of people is that these people may not all view certain words and values as equal. Nationalism and patriotism present us with an appropriately problematic pair with which to illustrate this. Are these words synonyms? Is one an insult and the other not? Can either of them mean different things to different people? And how does the speaker or writer define them? So, patriotism is the older of the two words, with published written evidence dating back to the middle of the 17th century, and I'm going to read those attestations in a moment. Patriotism came from adding the suffix ism to the existing word patriot, which itself came from a French word, which came from a Latin word patrios, meaning of the father, of one's father. So here's the earliest attestation. There are a lot of very big and complicated words in this, and I hope you can figure out what this is talking about, because I had to read it about 8 times to figure out what it was talking about. The writer is Thomas Urquhart. There hath been in London, and repairing to it for these many years together, a knot of Scottish bankers, colibists and coin counters, of traffickers in merchandise, to and again, and of men of other professions, who hug all unto themselves, that for no respect of virtue, honor, kindred, patriotism, or whatever else whereof, those, get ready for this word, quomodo conquising clusterfists and rapacious varlets hath given of late such cannibal-like proofs of their inhumanity and obdurate carriage towards some of those whose shoestrings they are not worthy to untie. If you saw how untie is spelled here, you would know why I almost said unity. That were it not the more able pen than mine, will assuredly not fail to jerk them on all sides. So that's the oldest attestation from 1652. And right around the same time, here's the second oldest attestation. And this is from a tract called Reasons Why the Supreme Authority of the Three Nations for the Time is Not in the Parliament. And it's from 1653. There is hardly any judicious man but knoweth that it will neither learning nor piety nor patriotism that persuaded any of the nation of Presbytery. So that's the second attestation. And then I just do want to tell you what a quizmodo conquizing clusterfist is. I feel like clusterfist is going to be my new word. So the first word, the quomodo conquizing, means to make money in any possible way. And clusterfist is a closed-fisted grasping person. Okay. Now, here are the attestations of nationalism. We do not have evidence that nationalism occurred any time before the 19th century, almost 150 years after the word patriotism. And in its early use, from the end of the 18th century onward for a number of decades, nationalism appears to have been largely interchangeable with patriotism and did not carry negative connotations or positive connotations different from patriotism, with both primarily being used to refer to a general love of one's country. So this is from the Marion County News in Hamilton, Alabama, from 1820. Nationalism must involve the consecrated devotion of a responsive citizenship. Sound policies must have universal faith, and unsound vagaries must have universal condemnation. another attestation from around the same time, a few years earlier, actually. Sorry, I read those out of order. From 1811 in the American Daily Advertiser in Philadelphia, a newspaper. Modern France, instead of diminishing, has, if possible, increased this nationalism. Removed from this oppression and atrocities, they see nothing but their own magnificence. And then the final attestation is from the New York Daily News in 1856. So these are the three earliest uses. If there be not conservatism and nationalism and patriotism enough in the North to rise up and overwhelm with numbers the spirit that points to the election of anybody but Fremont as the prelude to civil war, we had better seek to save as much fratricidal blood as possible in a peaceable line of immediate separation. So those are the earliest attestations of those two. So these two words shared a similar meaning up until the 19th century, but they appear to have diverged since then. It would be more accurate to say that only nationalism has grown apart, because the meaning of patriotism is basically still, well, this is a good question. Is it still what it was then? Nationalism has, in the last 150 years, especially in the late 19th century, early 20th century, meant had negative connotations. So patriotism, meaning the love of one's country, nationalism over the last 150 years has meant the love of one's country over and against and above all other countries. So those are the two understandings of patriotism and nationalism that I think should be our working thoughts at this point. I do think that we can problematize whether patriotism still means that.
Thank you, Jason. Okay, we're going to have some time of brief interaction. So I'd like you to, as my yoga teacher says, find a quiet partner. It doesn't mean they have to be quiet, but quietly find a partner now, and I'll give you further instructions. And if you don't have a partner, raise your hand. So we might have to get up and move a little bit. So go ahead and find a partner.
Okay.
Pairs of two. So the first prompt that you'll have 2 to 3 minutes to share, and I'll let you know when to change. But think about, okay, we're going to share this time, 2 to 3 minutes total. Share something you love about your country, okay? And to tell you when to switch, and you could switch a little bit before, slightly after. I'm just going to say beep, 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 okay? I just tried to give some kind of signal, okay? So listen for that. Go ahead. Share something you love about your country. Beep, beep, beep. Okay, go ahead and switch if you haven't. Switch to the other person. Okay. And I apologize in advance if I'm cutting off really good conversation. Part of the design of this process is just to germinate some thoughts that we'll add into the conversation. So now, please get a new partner, okay? So go ahead and find a new partner for the next prompt. Okay, and raise your hand if you need a partner. Okay, they got partnered up there. I think we should have an even number. Okay, someone in the back needs a partner. Okay, John, were you on your own the first time too, John?
No.
Okay. There's been some people coming in. Maybe you could join a partnership, John. Okay, so the next prompt is share something that concerns you about your country. Okay? And about 2.5 minutes total, and I'll tell you about halfway, and I'm not going to do the beeps anymore. I'll just say it's time to switch. Okay, go ahead. Okay. Thank you. All right. Now please find a new partner for our third and final round. New partner that you haven't been with, and maybe you don't even know yet.
That's my new word.
So the third and final is recall or share a time where you felt patriotic, or another way to put that is proud of something your country has done.
Can you say it again? I'm sorry.
Yep, that's okay. It's okay. Recall, share a time when you felt patriotic, or another way to put that is a time that you felt proud of something your country has done. Maybe they've passed certain legislation, or, you know, we're thinking about a national holiday. It could also be something local, you know. Okay? So go ahead in about 2.5 minutes and I'll tell you when to switch. Go for it. So, if you could, if you want, stay where you are or quietly make your way back to where you're sitting. It's up to you.
Thank you.
And I would like to take, just before we get ready for our next section, just to hear a couple words or phrases. So let's go through those questions. What are some things you love about your country?
First
Amendment. Say it again.
First Amendment.
Other things.
Openness.
Marshall Plan after the war.
Inclusiveness.
Diversity.
Freedom to choose.
Geography. What was that?
Freedom to choose.
Okay, next question. What are some things that concerns you about our country or your country?
Apathy.
Division. The administration.
Economic inequality.
Healthcare.
Polarization.
Education.
Failure to compromise.
Inequality.
Great. Okay, and then the third question, a time you felt patriotic. I'm trying to think if we can share this in a snippet. Yeah, if you can, this is the challenge of the day. As a headline, can you share what this time of patriotism or something you're proud of?
Marriage equality.
Thank you.
LGBTQ
protections.
Going to the moon.
9/11. Going to the moon.
My father's service.
Obama elected. Your father's service in World War II.
Admitting Vietnamese boat people.
Yeah, so it's amazing, all the different things. It's what I love about that exercise, sharing in pairs. We had all those parallel conversations happening, and all those things and more, because we didn't hear everyone, came up during that time. So this next section, we're going to talk with the panel, and the question is, how does your work intersect with patriotism and or nationalism? Okay? And we'll do about just a couple minutes each.
Here's Jason.
Hi. As many of you probably know and did not hear this morning since you were here, on the morning of the 4th of July every year, Morning Edition reads the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. And it started this in 1980 and has done it every 4th of July, or the Friday closest to the 4th of July, since then. And I'm always struck by the fact that depending on what's going on in the country, the Declaration of Independence being read aloud either makes me feel proud or having something still to strive for. And that it makes patriotism not a bad word, because this declaration has, you know, the valence of it, say, after 9/11 was different than the valence of it, you know, in 2017. After the 2016 election, or it meant something different during the Iraq War than it meant, you know, at other periods of time. It meant something different after Barack Obama was elected. And I like the idea that we read the same text over and over again, once a year, and church people know what this is like, right?
Yep.
Hearing a text every couple of years, every 3 years, and having to come up with, and it means something different each time, you know, the text spins around. We do it once a year, but it does mean something different. And I love that. To think about how my work intersects with nationalism, I did a lot of pieces about extremism and nationalism, and especially white nationalism, given that I oversee coverage in places like Idaho and, you know, Western Oregon, where a lot of the sort of what is called the Patriot Movement, but I wish were called something like the Nationalism Movement or the White Nationalism Movement, because it wouldn't steal the word patriot from those of us who think that there's nothing wrong with loving your country, but that doesn't mean you can't critique your country. So maybe I should think about ways to, when we talk about, you know, nationalist movements, white nationalist movements, that we should, you know, put in there that this is, that this is language that we should, that words like patriot are not, shouldn't be allowed to be stolen by one side, that it should be a word for many of us.
Christian.
So those are the ways that I think about my own work as an editor at NPR, that I can, you know, try to bring that forward to the rest of the country. I don't just sort of blithely say, well, the Northern Idaho Patriot Group does X. but, you know, say this is a white nationalist group that calls itself the Northern Idaho Patriot Movement.
Thank you, Jason.
Well, I'm David Campton. You can tell from my accent I'm not from around here. I'm from Northern Ireland, and this time of year, we have our own parades, but they are not generally as universally enjoyed by the community around us, because they tend to be parades on the 1st and the 12th of July that celebrate one nationalism triumphing over another. So it's about the triumph of King William of Orange in 1690 over Catholic King James, and it's the triumph of British nationalism ultimately over Irish nationalism. And that's the problem, in that Northern Ireland we have competing nationalisms, competing national identities, and in its lighter moments, that I've lived most of my life in Northern Ireland. I'm entitled to two passports. In terms of sporting events, in the Olympics, I very happily cheer on the Team GB in Northern Ireland, as despite our smaller numbers in the country, punch above our weight with you behemoths across the Atlantic. But when it comes to rugby, I follow rugby, as it is, and in the Six Nations every year I follow Ireland, because Ireland rugby is an all-Ireland sport, and I will cheer them on as they trundle over the English. With the USA England football game the other night, there were no questions as regards where my loyalty was, and it was not with the Lionesses. So I was quite glad to see USA win. It's called.
You mean soccer?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. You know that game that you play with your feet? Football? I do like American football, but, it is American football. That's all very well in sport, but when it becomes a blood sport, as it has been historically within Northern Ireland, that's not fun. And I, part of my vocation to ministry was actually to go back. I left Northern Ireland in 1985, not wanting anything more to do with it. I'd had it. It was, the classic Romeo and Juliet, pox on both your houses. And I only went back to Northern Ireland with a Scottish wife in tow, in the midst of bad years of troubles, partly triggered by some truly traumatic events, where a sense of my vocation was to go back into the mess, to seek to make a difference. And that's been a very strong part of my ministry throughout. And in the background, I've worked quite hard at mediating and doing political to-ing and fro-ing, bringing people together both at a political level and a community level to have discussions, to bring these two competing ideologies together. And I still facilitate behind-the-scenes conversations, including with violent Republicans. Involved as a director in Four Corners Festival, which is about celebrating difference across our, what the title of one of our festivals recently was, across our wounded but wonderful city, or rather wounded and wonderful. Yeah. It's wounded and it's wonderful at one and the same time. A big part of my ministry is about trying to allow people to celebrate those diverse aspirations and identities.
Thank you, David.
So my name's Todd Drake, and I'm a son of the South. I was born and raised in North Carolina and lived there from 1969 to about 2014 in the same county, and I just moved to different corners of the county for some variety over the decades. But I want to tell you about a journey that has taken me from being one type of patriot to, I think, being a very different patriot. When I was growing up, my father died. My father died at 2 years old. My stepfather died at 14. And my mother had the wisdom to put me into a scouting program that would expose me to good men. And they say it takes about 14 men in a boy's life to teach him how to be a man. And I had those men. And we were very patriotic, right? I have recited the Pledge of Allegiance a million times and saluted the flag and know how to retire an aged flag, right? Properly bury it or burn it. I'm an Eagle Scout. I raised my kids in scouting. So I had that type of patriotism as a child. But two other forces changed my life, and one of them is Lutheranism. After I was newly married, my wife and I bought a house, a little tiny starter house, and next door, six dark-skinned, very small, very skinny men moved in. They were the Montagnard from Vietnam, the Aboriginal Highlanders that had helped our soldiers during Vietnam stay alive. And we had abandoned them when we left, literally leaving them on the banks of rivers waiting to be picked up by helicopters and boats that never came. 10 years later, these men made their way through Cambodia to Thailand, and U.S. veterans heard about them and brought them to the United States. And it was Lutheran Family Services that settled them. And the people that helped these six men were Lutheran. And I had never heard of a Lutheran. And I'd never seen white people really caring about people of color, right? I'm raised in a racist community around a lot of very conservative Protestants. And so I became a follower of Luther and joined the church and raised my family inside of that. Our oldest son, grew up in Montagnard houses where they were slaughtering pigs in the kitchen, right? He has memories of this. And his best friends were kids his age that had just came out of the jungles of Cambodia. That deeply, deeply changed our family. My son today is an ACLU attorney on the border of Mexico, fighting Trump, and he has a tattoo that he's just added to his shoulder of oak leaves and Montagnard red peppers. Oak leaves are for the trees that surrounded our home, and the peppers are in honor of the Montagnards. He recognizes how deeply they shaped him. Another community that deeply shaped me were the Quakers. And for a long time, I said, I'm a friend of the Friends, right? And I moved through the education system of the Quakers. I taught at Guilford College. And in all this mix, I took on the values, I think, of being a good American citizen. But I most valued the idea of equality, that we are all equally human. And so I developed a career and a body of art around focusing on equality, right? The first and foremost human right. Today at lunch, they said it's, of course, to be fed. But once your stomach's full, then you want to be considered an equal human. And so I spent many years in North Carolina reminding my fellow citizens that the Muslim American is still an American, is equally human, and does not need to be, you know, put down on a lower totem pole, or that the undocumented immigrant is. My son married an undocumented immigrant. She became a citizen after they got through college together. And our family has welcomed people of different color and different religion into our family. And I challenge us all to recognize that if we're going to consider each other equals, we have to be willing to love, to marry, to make them part of our innermost circle. If we don't, we're still keeping some separation. Right, this idea that somehow my family is better than yours. And so nationalism can play out in the family as well as on the national level, or in the church, or in the corporate organizations. Today I live in New York and I work with inner city kids. I'm trying to give them the American dream of getting out of their family's subsidized housing, right, and move into a home of their own. That requires $50,000 worth of income in New York City, so I'm training inner-city youth to be advertising agents and make $75,000 out of the box. These are the ways I now express my patriotism. If you ever meet a Quaker, they're not going to stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance. They're not going to put their hand on the Bible and say, I swear to tell the truth. And that's because the Quaker tradition says, walk in the light. That means live your ideals. And so why do I need to say a pledge when I'm living that pledge? So just keep that in mind. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Todd. I'm David Westerlin. I live in Bellingham, Washington. I'm here with my daughter, Simone, this week. And I'm leading sessions on applied improv. And the connection, I love finding connections. We do this in improv, too. A couple characters come in, like, what's going to happen? And you find a connection. So the one thing that comes to mind is there was a day, a particular day of note, November 2016, which happened to be election day. And in the morning, I found out I got a study grant from the Louisville Institute to explore the impact of improv with people on the margins and people in the mainstream church. And that night was the night of the election. So it was an interesting day. And the seed of intuition I had in that moment is what I'm going to start learning and diving into more is going to have relevance for what happened that day. And the connection I see, and Russ and other people who've been to my sessions, improv, the foundations of it is about cultivating presence. And when we're truly present and open with someone, not trying to control, but curious and moving towards them and supporting them, amazing things can happen and emerge. And so really, I'm about how do we be present and truly see each other without trying to control, but have the posture of a learner and being open. Yeah. I think that's all I'll say for that. So in this next segment, I'd like you to get into groups of four, okay? And it may be four or five. Four or five is fine. So go ahead and do that, and I'll give you further instructions. Could you guys help me hand out this? So we'd like you to brainstorm. So no need to edit or go, oh, no, I don't like that. Just go ahead and write down with at least 10 concrete ways you could demonstrate a reformed patriotic love. Okay? A little note on that. Todd, do you have your phone right there?
Yeah.
Can you hold it up and read what your phone says?
Dissent is patriotic.
Dissent is patriotic. So just remember, have a full view of what this reformed patriotic love could look like. So once again, come up with at least 10 concrete ways you could demonstrate a reformed patriotic love. And I'm going to give you about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. Go for it. And remember, just to be as brief as you can, you don't always have to give an explanation. Okay. Can I have your attention? It's okay if you're not a 10. There will be no grade. With the list that you have, I'd like you to take 1 minute or less to just circle three of them. Just pick three as a group. It's the exercise and making quick decisions. What's the criteria for picking them? Yeah, whatever you guys resonate with. It might be the best or something doable. Okay, raise your hand if you have three circled. Okay, you have three circled? Okay, got one group up there. Okay, so now with those three circled, cross out one of them. Aren't I mean? Cross out one of them. It's about building focus. Okay. And now cross out a second one so that you'll be left with one. Cross out a second one so that you'll be left with one. Raise your hand if you've got it down to one item. Thank you. I see one group. I see two groups. I see three groups, maybe. You got it down to one? It's sort of like when you're ordering food. By the time it gets to me, I'll know, right? And this group's deliberating. Okay, let's start. So Jason's going to write up. So what's the one thing that you came up with? Let's start with we're going to wait on them. Over here.
We got one.
Willingness to listen.
Can you say it again?
Willingness to listen.
Is everyone hearing that?
Yes.
Okay, willingness to listen. Okay. Over here?
Spread truth, especially in the media.
Spread truth, especially in the media. And I would challenge with each of these, think, how would I concretely do that? What's even one step I could take today or this next week? Okay, and this group?
Education regarding inclusive diversity, differences, and listening.
Awesome. Did you get that? Education, including... diversity, inclusiveness, and listening. I heard listening again.
Here's Russ.
Intentionally saying that love is the glue and now we're going to talk. But to say that love is the glue and now we're going to talk
over the,
differences. But
okay. So there's something higher than you were just saying, Todd.
It's just talking over the red and blue fence, right?
Yeah.
And using love as that vehicle, that bridge.
Cool.
Do we do this group?
Yeah. Prioritizing family and education and healthcare.
Okay.
Prioritizing family, education, and healthcare. And then back here.
Vote and encourage others to do so.
Vote and encourage others to do so. Okay. Top.
Engage in democracy, but being active about it.
Yeah.
From an individual level, you see something that you don't like, you say something if it's unjust. All the way up to writing letters to your senators, just engaging.
Active engagement.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. Okay. So we have willingness to listen, spread the truth. Okay, and pay attention as I read this. Think if there's any themes of all this, okay? Threads. Willingness to listen, spread truth, especially in the media. Education, including diversity, inclusiveness, listening. Intentionally saying love is the glue, and then willing to talk. Prioritizing family, education, healthcare. Vote and encourage others to do so, and engaging in democracy actively. It's a great
communication
list.
Communication is the link.
Yeah.
Communication.
I would include listening and be willing to listen.
Yeah, let me get a different color.
Listening.
It's interesting, because that came up in my sessions too. Okay. Listening is a theme.
It seems like the word action is in all of them.
Huh, yeah. Because the question again is how can we concretely love, show our patriotism, and it's through action. Yep. Great.
Love.
Let's just circle love. Any other burning things? Because I know I asked you to cross things out. Are there any other ones that you want to share from your group?
Maybe the simplest
one. The importance or lack thereof, but the importance of symbols such as the flag. Where is it? How do we use it? Just different church, our pastor is going to be saying to take out the American flag, which made everybody go, "Durr!" And then she said, "Russ, you're going to lead the conversation on that." That's a lot. I'm retired.
Okay. But I mean, there's a flag in the sanctuary.
What we call a Christian flag on either side.
What is the importance of symbolism?
And religious, we use the cross as a symbol.
So I think one concrete thing that I'm hearing even more at meta level, Russ, is that, asking questions about those things and learning how to have civil dialogue.
Around that as they
particularly. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Great.
Don't forget the symbols and storytelling tomorrow from 10 to 12.
Okay. 10 to 12, symbols and storytelling. Good pitch. Yes. And 2 p.m., how do we build resilience through listening? It's all right here. Okay, any closing thoughts by panel members? Okay, I mean, here's the thing. This is ongoing, just like this ongoing experiment we call the United States. It's an ongoing conversation.
Yeah.
So thank you all for engaging in dialogue. And Todd, do you have some?
Yeah, take a picture of this.
Yeah.
Think about what you can do.
Yeah. And I do this one exercise. It's called 15% Solutions. So giving the authority, the resources you have right now, what's a small, concrete action? And the idea is, just by making action, moving from, not that we're stagnant, but to start moving towards something, that creates momentum. And all of us moving in small ways can create a tidal shift. Yeah.
Sorry, can I just say one last thing? And I've said this in personal discussions with a couple of people. A lot of folks have talked a lot about political divisions, in Europe, in Britain at the moment over Brexit, and here as regards the red and blue discussion. Take a look at Northern Ireland.
Right.
Because we are an object lesson.
Yes.
In where competing identities and particularly when they are baptized in any shape or form by religion.
Mm-hmm.
Where that can take you. And let me tell you, the one thing that saved us in Northern Ireland was the fact that it took a lot of effort for those who wanted to resort to violence to go get guns.
Oh.
Be it guns or bombs. And God forbid, you've got to sort your conversations out because you don't have that protection. Conversation is all, and listening is all. You gotta get it sorted, because you know the way things are going, those competing identities, the danger is that they can pull you in a devastating direction.
Thank you, David. All right, thank you for coming, and please keep the conversation going.